That's the blizzard there. Trust me, I'm a doctor, which many of us have heard all the time. It's become a cliche at this point. So often that some doctors think you should trust them because of their degrees rather than because of anything they say to you or their manner when they're discussing your symptoms. A bedside manner has long been something that either a doctor has or doesn't have. And it can't be trained, right? Well, that's not necessarily true. And a growing number of medical schools are now using what's called a multiple mini interview, or MMI. That's in addition to their MCAT scores and their GPA. The MMI tests for ethical reasoning and communication ability. Joining us now, Dr. Harold Ryder, professor of medicine at McMaster University in Canada. And doctor, I understand you helped develop this test, the MMI.
Good morning, Celeste. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks.
I was one of a group of creators that came up with the idea in 2001, and together with some funding from our faculty, the Medical Council of Canada, and the National Board of Medical Examiners, we were fortunate enough to spend a number of years studying and researching the concept.
Well, explain to me, what was it that you were hearing that made you think something like this was necessary to test the communication skills of young doctors?
Been concerned for a long time, either from word of mouth or from data from studies, that there are issues in terms of the way patients are dealt with by their physicians. In particular, there's a study that was done by Maxine Papadakis at UCSF, and one of its findings, looking at the complaints to state medical boards, was that 92% of the identifiable causes for complaint were due to physicians' personal and professional characteristics, not due to any cognitive failings on their part.
Well, that's it. Dr. Harold Ryder, professor of medicine at McMaster University in Canada. Also with us, Dr. William Branch, professor of medicine and director of general internal medicine at Emory University School of Medicine. And this is something that you have been working on as well, Dr. Branch. And were you seeing the same things, that the large number of complaints because of a doctor's communication skills and their personal demeanor?
Well, again, it's nice to be here, and I appreciate being asked to talk. I began working in this field about 25 years ago,
wow.
And I have to say that our work was more aimed at a kind of belief that we needed to train doctors, not just to train them, but to really develop their capacities to be compassionate, to be humanistic, and to be able to communicate effectively with patients. So we didn't start from the sense that there was something wrong with, from the sense that there was a lot that could be done in this field.
We're talking about training doctors and having a good bedside manner. That's basically what we're talking about. That's Dr. William Branch of Emory University. And doctor, you know, as I was saying in the introduction, oftentimes people thought that a doctor was born with a good bedside manner or not. How do you train it?
Well, I think, you know, what I discovered, and it was really a discovery because it surprised me to the extent that the medical students that were coming into Harvard when I was in charge of the patient-doctor course in the third year there, these students had a lot of capacity for compassion, and they were very idealistic. So our job turned out to be more to develop that capacity, encourage it, and allow them, put them in a learning climate where this was encouraged and where they could develop to the fullest rather than that there was something wrong to begin with.
That's Dr. William Branch of Emory University. Also with us, Dr. Harold Ryder, professor of medicine at McMaster University in Canada. Doctors, I want you to take a listen to this comment we got from one of our listeners. Take a listen.
I'm a listener to WHWS up in Geneva, New York. I was in chemotherapy a few years back, and my oncologist was a nice guy but kind of distant. But during my treatment period, he and his wife had their first kid and had some complications during the delivery and got really freaked out, and no one would really tell them what was going on. And the change in his bedside manner after the shoe was on the other foot, so to speak, was quite remarkable. He was a much, much better doctor, much more empathetic and thorough. I certainly wouldn't wish what he went through on anyone, but I think having that perspective really seemed to help him as a doctor.
Dr. Harold Ryder, I wonder if you're number one, surprised by that kind of anecdote, but also that sometimes perhaps doctors become distant to their patients and lose some of the empathy that maybe would help them to be a better doctor. Is that fair?
I think so. I agree wholeheartedly with Dr. Branch. There's a tremendous capacity to have compassion, to have the ability to make the correct ethical decisions. And sometimes it takes that kind of incident to change us. Equally, we want to choose for those who have the greater capacity to begin with. It's sometimes easier to avoid problematic doctors by avoiding bringing them into medical school in the first place.
So that's what your test is all about. The MMI, the multiple mini interview, is testing for those doctors who may have a deficit of empathy.
Absolutely.
And how does it do that? How does that work?
Physically, it's sort of like speed dating in the way it's set up. There can be 10 separate rooms, each with a short interview involved, with 10 applicants to the medical school, and they each go into a room, have about 8 minutes in each room before the bell goes off, and each room will be a different interviewer with a different interview scenario. Some may deal more with ethics, some more with communication, some with teamwork.
We're speaking right now with the two doctors. Dr. Harold Ryder there is at the McMaster University in Canada, and he's talking about his multiple mini-interview test. Dr. William Branch of Emory University, listening to talk about the MMI test, can you train someone who has a deficit of empathy, one would say, or if they failed this MMI test? Or is it better to keep them out of medical school, perhaps, as Dr. Harold Ryder suggests?
I imagine there's a small percentage of people who are so unempathetic and distant to begin with that they probably should not be in medical school. The experience I had with the students I've taught at Emory and at Harvard was that even the ones that struggled got better and often became quite compassionate people, even though they might have struggled to communicate that to patients, given the right opportunities to learn in new ways that we've only had available for the past 20 years or so.
That's Dr.
Basically, experiential learning where they're actually doing it and getting feedback on it.
Dr. William Branch of Emory University School of Medicine. Dr. Harold Ryder, in the last minute before we go, what does a patient do if you feel like your doctor is not listening to you or is not empathetic? Do you just find another doctor, or is there anything that you can say to them?
I think patients control much more than they sometimes believe. They can be more adamant, politely so, but can be more adamant that more attention is required. I think the approach of Dr. Branch and that I have proposed are not mutually exclusive. One thing, let's choose the doctors that have the greatest capacity for compassion, and once in the medical school, let's train them to be the best in terms of compassion and ethics that we can.
Dr. Harold Ryder helped develop the multiple mini-interview test that tests for ethics and communication skills in medical school admissions, and Dr. William Branch has been working with that at Emory University School of Medicine. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Celeste.
We certainly want to get your stories about your doctors, especially if you are a doctor. Tell us about bedside manner and whether or not it makes you a better doctor. And we also want to get your response about what's going on in Capitol Hill. Abigail in Boston thinks the problem with the report with the politicians might not be as bad as it's being reported. She said on our website, "I'm a career counsel. I've had my share of jobs to make ends meet when my corporate job was eliminated. The other side of unemployment is not how many jobs a person applied for, but how many people they've called or emailed or spoken to in any given day. There are jobs, not great jobs, but jobs people can do to keep themselves in the job market." Give us your story about jobs, politicians, or even bedside manners at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.